evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, July 3rd, 2020. Authorities in Jonglei State say cattle keepers killed several people in the area on Thursday.
We were informed this morning about the attack, which took place around 5 o'clock early in the morning in Dupadie. The cattle was inside, was very close to the town, okay? So these people came, and then they attacked the cattle camp.
And some residents of Jebel Mara in Sudan say the transitional government should protect their families.
We are unable to move around, not even for half a kilometer outside the town for our normal farming activities during this rainy season. We are threatened by pro-government militia groups.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Police in Jonglei State say suspected cattle raiders from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area killed 12 people and injured more than 10 in three separate attacks over the past 3 days. The Jonglei State Police Commissioner says the cattle raiders killed 4 people, injured 9 others, and stole hundreds of cattle from a camp in Poktap Village. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Major General Joseph Mayana Akon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says suspected cattle raiders ambushed a vehicle traveling from Juba to Bor on Tuesday, killing 4 people, including a mother of a 4-month-old baby. He says on the same day, another group of suspected cattle raiders from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area attacked a cattle camp in Twitch East County, killing 4 people. He says in the third attack, which occurred Thursday, the cattle raiders killed 4, injured 9 others, and stole hundreds of cattle in Poktap in Duke County, Jonglei State. Akon says another attack in Dukpadiet happened Friday morning, although few details are available.
We were informed this morning about the attack, which took place around 5 o'clock early in the morning in Dukpadiet. The cattle was inside. Was very close to the town, okay? So these people came, and then they attacked the cattle camp, and then they took all the cows. This is what we are told. So people, up to the moment, I think people are running after the cows. For about the casualties, we have not yet received the accurate information.
Akon says he has deployed police forces to the villages of Jonglei State.
There are police deployed all over these areas. We have police in all the Payam of Jonglei County, from here, from Konyang up to Pagak. We have deployed police. But the problem in police, those people who are deployed, they don't have armament. They don't have guns. This is one of the problems. So the participation of police in those crises is not 50% because of the armament. We don't have armament in those areas. In terms of transport, we don't have cars. Really, we don't have cars. Our mobility is very, very, very weak. We don't have. And this is one of the problems. We have cars, but they are all off road. They are not working.
Judy Jongulei Boyoris, former speaker of the now defunct Boma State, last month said armed Murle youth could have gone to Jonglei for revenge attacks because of the ongoing fighting in Pibor between youth from Bor, Akobo, and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. On Friday, he said he was in a meeting and could not comment about the attacks. Devoroy Chain, the head of the United Nations Missions in South Sudan, or UNMISS, field office in Bor, said the UN is concerned about the security incidents in Jonglei State and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
Yes, we're very much aware of all the incidents that are happening, not only the incident that happened yesterday, but the incidents that are happening in Tweak East, in Akobo, Akobo East, and other places, and what's going on in the GPAA also. We're very concerned, and what we're trying to do is encourage everybody to stop fighting. This is what's required is the withdrawal of all the different youth groups that have been engaged in the conflict, and then we can start with negotiations and bringing people together.
Chaien urges the committee President Kiir formed to address violence in the Greater Jonglei region to act quickly.
We're here to support the high-level committee that's been appointed, but what we want to see is we want to see action right now. We want to see a stop to this fighting and destruction. It's not going to do anything for the country. It's not going to bring development for this country.
Major General Lul Roy Kwong, the South Sudan's People Defense Force spokesman, says the SSPDF has launched a disarmament effort in Tony North County of Werribee State this week. He says the project will be extended to target armed civilians in Lakes, Werup, and Jonglei State, as well as in Turkeka County of Central Equatoria State, in an attempt to end the cycle of intercommunal violence.
Disarmament is being done in two phases. Phase one is a peaceful exercise where the traditional chiefs are taking the lead. They had met with the commander and had asked him to give them time so that they compile a list of all the youths who are carrying arms. Then they earn in their weapons voluntarily. That one is also being supported by holding a political rallies together with local MPs to sensitize the youth on the disadvantages of them carrying arms. Then later on, whoever would not have handed over his gun after that period is going to be declared as an outlaw, and the guns from the who not have handed over their guns will be collected forcefully.
David Shearer, the special representative of the UN Secretary General last month, said that fighters in uniform were seen among those engaged in intercommunal violence, indicating that more organized forces might have joined. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Residents of Jebel Mara in central Darfur are calling on the Sudanese transitional government to remove a security committee in the area. Civilians in the area say for the last month, members of the paramilitary rapid support forces have committed atrocities and the local security committee has done nothing about it. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Thousands of civilians, including traditional leaders, traders, members of the resistance committee, have staged a sit-in at the headquarters of West Jebel Mara locality in Nyertiti town for nearly a week. The sit-in organizers say for the past 1 month, the resistance committees have recorded more than 20 incidents of rape, arbitrary detention, physical assault, and looting of property. They blame the abuses on members of the Rapid Support Forces and the other militia groups that back former President Leader Omar al-Bashir. Residents say they are unable to farm their fields or graze their cattle outside the town because they fear being targeted by the Rapid Support Forces. Adam Rijal is an executive member of the ITP camp in West Jebel Mara. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via WhatsApp from Nyertiti town, he says the paramilitary group has committed systematic atrocities against civilians and local authorities have failed to intervene. Speaking in Arabic, Rijal says civilians could no longer tolerate the insecurity in the area.
We are unable to move around, not even for half a kilometer outside the town for our normal farming activities during this rainy season. We are threatened by pro-government militia groups. These are the same militia which have been accused several times of committing crimes of massacre, ethnic cleansing, war crimes and crimes against humanity during al-Bashir's time.
Rijal also says there has been an organized looting of property in markets and homes, with looters using motorbikes. He says many people have lost their lives in the raids. He says they have been talking with the executive director, Sifian Musa, and the central Darfur state governor, Suleiman Lamin. Unfortunately, he says, the two leaders have not been able to address the matter. That is why, Rijal says, they decided to stage a sit-in protest until their demands are met.
We call for an immediate removal of the whole security team, including the executive director, the head of the military intelligence, and the director of police. When citizens report any incident, the police seem to be reluctant to pursue the case.
Sudanese women rights activist Salma Suleiman says women and children in Central Darfur have suffered for so long and it is time for them to experience little peace. Speaking in Arabic, Suleiman says, while protesters need to observe the health directives to avoid contracting COVID-19, as thousands of citizens from different parts of Darfur are expected to join the sit-in.
They need to observe health precautionary measures. We have few medical teams in the ground that are testing only for high fever. We need to have teams that help in sanitizing the protesters, and also they need to have face masks.
Muhammad Abdulrahman Al-Nair is the spokesperson for Sudan's liberation movement, Abdul Wahid Faction. He calls for an amicable solution to address the protesters' demands. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, Al-Nair says the demands are legitimate and must be supported.
We call on all Sudanese and the world to support the protesters so that they are able to achieve their demands. They have been subjected to systemic atrocities on a daily basis. They need to be helped in all forms and have their voices heard.
The protesters are calling on the transitional government to provide security for farmers, return stolen cattle to their rightful owners, and bring the perpetrators to justice. Thousands of protesters from Niala, Al-Fashir, Al-Janina, and Zalinje are expected to arrive in Nyerere Friday and the following days as a sign of solidarity with the people of Nyerere. The Sudanese transitional government is yet to make an official statement on the protests or abuses. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
One traffic police officer in Juba says he is spending his time to change the image of the police force in the capital. Some civil society activists recognize George Kenyi for his work in Juba. Motorists and activists say Kenyi has been doing his work without taking bribes from motorists. Kenyi says he wants to be among South Sudanese who are working to bring change to their country. For VOA News, Wakes Simon Wood reports from Juba.
That is traffic officer George Kenyi controlling the vehicle flow at Juba's 7 days roundabout one morning about 2 weeks ago. Kenyi's name came to the spotlight about 2.5 months ago when some motorists noticed him on duty at the roundabout, took his photos and posted it on social media. Many hailed him as the only honest traffic police officer and suggested rewarding him to show appreciation for his diligence and to encourage him. Impressed motorists working with the head of traffic police recently organized an event at the 7 days roundabout to give Kenyi several gifts, including food, furniture, and about 350,000 South Sudanese pounds, equal to $1,100. Like many South Sudanese government employees, Kenyi often must wait months to get paid. Asked what inspires him to work diligently despite irregular pay, Kenyi says passion and dedication are some of the forces driving him to wake up every day and come to the street.
There is no one that can come from another country to work and build my country. Only the citizens of this country can work and build this country. That is why you can get me every day working, because I believe that I can be the one to build my nation.
Before joining the traffic police, Kenyi, a father of five, originally worked as a local merchant in several parts of the country. He then graduated as a police officer in 2010. At first, he worked in the police department of operations and was deployed in the Bahr El Ghazal region. However, following an incident where he sustained a gunshot wound, Kenyi was transferred back to Juba and deployed as a police traffic officer in 2014. As in any job, Kenyi says he encounters some challenges.
There are people who obey the law. there are people as well in this country who do not obey the law. That's why if you get one who does not obey the law, you educate him or her about the law.
In South Sudan, relations between the traffic police and the public can be rocky because many citizens see the traffic police as corrupt people who harass civilians and extort money from them. Luate Satimo Joel, a motorist in Juba, says the way Kenyi diligently does his work gives him hope.
To me, I just summarize it that he's a very leader with integrity, and he inspires so many people. I don't think there's one who complains bad about him here because he minds his work, given all the crisis that is happening in this country.
After he was noticed and praised by Juba residents, Kenyi was promoted from sergeant to first lieutenant. Here is his message for other officers.
I would like to tell them that they should work with the law, that their seniors have told them, because there is no one who can come to the streets and start working on the streets with his or her own style or ideas.
General Colonel John Akot, the traffic police director, says Kenyi is one of the few officers the police force has recognized. He challenges the public to participate in fighting police corruption.
Any civilians who has seen any traffic officer taking money from the drivers of a water tank or any vehicle, anyone who has a camera should immediately take a photo of that officer.
Akot says while there are several other police officers who have been promoted because of their good work, many others have been demoted and imprisoned for crimes committed in the course of their work. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the effects of COVID-19 related lockdown on teenagers in Kenya. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related, I just never give up.
Golden rule. No, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As Kenya struggles to curb the spread of the coronavirus, the East African country is facing another outbreak, teenage pregnancy. During the 3 months of lockdown, 150,000 teenage girls became pregnant, a 40% increase in the monthly average. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
45-year-old Tabitha Mukui lives in a remote village in Machakos County, Eastern Kenya. Her teenage daughter is one of 152,000 young girls that government officials say have become pregnant since Kenya announced its first COVID-19 case in March and went on lockdown. Her teenage daughter is one of 150,000 young girls that government officials say have become pregnant since Kenya announced its first COVID-19 case in March and went on lockdown. The mother of seven discovered the pregnancy just last week after her daughter wore a sweater for many days. She says, "I asked her to remove her sweater and she removed the sweater. I look at her and saw that she was pregnant. I felt so angry inside, but I did not beat her. I did not yell at her." Rafael Chengo is the local chief in the area. He says in 1 year, we will get one or two cases of teenage pregnancy. The cases that I have received this time around, since the school closed, the cases have doubled. In these 3 months, I have received and directly dealt with 4 cases. The town of Matu Vision Center provides safety for vulnerable boys and girls. John Gatuku of the center says they have received 41 cases since March, 18 of them girls.
Defilement cases was a major factor there among the group. We have also 3 cases of orphaned children, and the rest of the group to seek protection. We found that they are not safe in places where they used to reside before.
Machakos County officials say they recorded 4,000 cases in the past 3 months. Kate Maina Voli, country director for women's rights group Plan International in Kenya, says the COVID-19 pandemic is taking away the gains made by empowering girls.
It's shone a light on the ugly face of gender-based violence and the atrocities that are committed on girls in Kenya. It has shone a light on the gender disparities, and we now run the risk of eroding all the gains we've had in terms of advancing equality for girls.
As for Mukui, she says she has accepted the situation with her daughter and is ready to support her when she's ready to finish her education. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Matu, Kenya.
In the Netherlands, sex workers welcomed customers back this week as the European nation eased corona measures. But sex workers and their clients were advised to avoid heavy breathing and kissing to help reduce the risk of transmitting COVID-19. Reuters' Soraya Ali reports.
Dutch sex worker Moira Mona is preparing to welcome back customers as the Netherlands further eases its restrictions. Alongside her usual latex outfits, she'll now have a leather face cover and black gloves to comply with new protocols. Sex workers already adhere to strict health and safety regulations in the Netherlands, but the industry has compiled a list of recommendations, including sex positions, to avoid. Public health advisor Debbie Mensik explains.
We advise them to avoid being too close to each other's faces or feeling each other's breath. The intention is to not breathe out onto each other's face. We're also advising them not to kiss, because this suggests an exchange of saliva. The virus could be in the saliva and thus be transmitted.
Mensik also added that even with these new guidelines, sex workers will still be more exposed to the dangers of COVID-19 than other professionals. Amsterdam's red light district is usually bustling with thousands of tourists wanting to see sex shows, workers and erotic gift shops. But now the streets have been deserted. Erotic dancers and sex workers lost their main source of income for 3.5 months and generally did not have access to state support. Mona made some income during lockdown by doing webcam shows, but said if the measures had remained in place much longer, she would have spent her entire savings. Now she says she will work with caution.
I don't get unemployment benefits if I get sick. So when someone starts coughing or sneezing in my hallway, I say, "Sweetheart, could you come back another time? Because I don't feel like doing this. Because if I'm out of the running for a week, I earn no money for a week."
Mm-hmm. South Africa's Market Theatre is one of several African cultural institutions that has recently gone entirely online because of the corona restrictions that prevent large gatherings. But for this small institution, often known as the Theatre of the Struggle, obstacles are nothing new. Now, the theatre hopes its artistic message, which touches on local and global events, will resonate beyond the African continent. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Johannesburg's Market Theatre is no stranger to struggle. It opened in 1976 at the height of South Africa's racist apartheid system and made a point of flouting segregation laws. And so now, as a global pandemic has made live shows impossible, the institution's artistic director, James Noble, says the show must go on, even if that means it goes online. He told VOA the acclaimed theater, which has received 21 international awards for its work, is now seizing the opportunity to spread its stories well beyond this country by streaming its entire season online. Not only that, it is writing brand new topical shows that touch on the issues many South Africans and people across the world are facing right now. Almost said he cooked up the plan shortly after South Africa's government announced a strict total lockdown in late March, shuttering pretty much all non-essential businesses.
I then said to my team, we are going on a long pause that we don't know the pause is going to last for how long, but our stories can never be on pause. And my team said to me, so what do we do? And I said, well, we are going to commission some of our finest playwrights to create works for us that at the moment, these short plays that are between 20 and 25 minutes that we are producing for the virtual space.
South African actor and playwright Paul Slapalepsi says it is more important than ever that art continues to be made. He spoke to VOA on the Google Hangouts platform.
Without art, we are nothing. We explain ourselves. Our conversations come through storytelling. If we were living just with the struggles that we have, with no hope, life would be terrifying. We need stories all the time. We need to connect in any way we can to feel human.
National theaters in Algeria and Egypt are also doing live shows online. And Somalia's National Theater recently reopened for Independence Day celebrations. And hopefully, more. Meanwhile, major theaters on New York's Broadway and London's West End have also gone online. Olbo says the Market Theater has gotten an enthusiastic response to its online offerings from people in the U.S., Europe, and other African countries. But he laments that the continent's artistic houses could do more. His theater is communicating with institutions in Ghana, Namibia, and Zimbabwe to help them go online.
In most places around the continent, it's very sad because some places might not have the infrastructure that you find in other countries that I've mentioned and South Africa. And so we are always looking at an idea of working with countries that, especially Anglophone countries.
At the small theater in central Johannesburg, the doors may be closed and the lights may be off, but the curtain will still rise. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Shauri Yako by Super Mazembe. This one goes out to our listeners who were born before the computer was invented. Listening to Super Mazembe with the song Shauri Yako. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us this evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.